right, everybody, what's going on? Welcome to another episode of Fire Builders Live. Just like always, I'm coming at you from Key West, Florida, and guess who I have on the show today? My buddy, Nate Darling. Nate, welcome to Fire Builders Live.
Thanks, Josh.
Yes, this is going to be such a good... We've tried to plan this before in season one, and it didn't work out. I'm so happy that we could make it happen in season two. Before we get into what we are going to be talking about, let me explain to everybody listening at home what in the hell we're doing here. What is Fire Builders Live? We stream live Monday through Saturday, 6 days a week, and we bring on guests like Nate. We take these big goals and we break them down into small steps, things that you can do every day consistently to succeed and progress and be happy and live a fulfilling life, whatever it is that you're looking for. And today is no different. Let me tell you a little bit about Nate. Now, I have something. Okay, so I have something written down, but I think I might also go off the cuff here a little. Nate and I have been friends for a long time. And Nate and I also have very similar paths in life that we didn't even know about until we met each other. I want to say 2008.
Yeah.
2008, right? So Nate here, I mean, he has spent two decades doing all kinds of ridiculously crazy jobs, working in kitchens, sailing on tall ships, his latest counting photons in an astrophysics lab, right? His background is incredibly diverse. And it's not unlike all of the incredible, rare, esoteric, worldly spirits that he is now procuring as the owner and operator of Peacut and Carwick, which is essentially this independent bottler out of San Francisco that searches out some of the best spirits in these small batch, incredible alcohols and brings them straight to you. I think this is an incredible idea. We've talked about it at length for a number of years. Europe said the reason that I love and I'm so excited about this conversation is that you are obsessed with promoting a deeper dialogue about spirits, where honestly a single pour can take somebody to a completely different time and place. But it is not just about, you know, catching a buzz or drinking a bottle, something like that. It's also the background behind these spirits, behind what you learn. It's about the aromas and the flavors that transcend race and gender, right? And actually cause you to really appreciate what makes us all human. And that, my friend, is going to be the crux, the basis of our conversation today. I am so excited to have you here, Nate. Again, welcome to Fire Builders Live.
Thanks, Josh. That was an epic introduction. Thank you. I would actually give you some credit in the forming of this whole idea, because I think it came out of a conversation between us a while ago when I kind of came away with this idea that for some reason that I should retire with a cave full of barrels full of whiskey and rum and other things.
Yeah.
So that is actually the goal here in the end. But yeah, like you kind of hit the nail on the head. I wanted a deeper dialogue. When I first started approaching spirits, you know, I kind of dive deep on stuff. I geek out, right? And I wanted to get into it. I hit this wall, and like in the marketing and the presentation of spirits, it just there wasn't enough information there. It was made so that, like, I wanted to spend money on it. I wanted to buy it. I wanted to bring it into my, you know, like, I wanted to actually taste it, you know, but then I'd get there and like, okay, well, now I just have to buy another one or something like that. And I didn't really get any information out of about the thing that was in the bottle, right? And that's really what I wanted. I started looking for it. And probably a decade later, I started this company because this seems to be the best way to get that information at this point. But that's not what I want for everyone else. So I want to actually be able to take that discussion into, like you said, the history, the politics, the sociology, and really the big one for me is the flavor, right? Because that really, like, I'm not really a distillery nerd or you know, somebody who, like, I will at some point go on the bourbon trail, but that's not my primary goal. My primary goal is to figure out, like, how do we talk about the flavors that are in this thing? Because it's so complex, and you know, we talk about, like, you know, the the experience distilled down is like a phrase we use. This is literally the experience distilled and put in a bottle and presented. So that's what I want to do.
Dude, well, I think it's amazing. I mean, because let's just say, so we have together, because Nate and I were in engineering school together as well. We both got our master's at Boston University. And so I feel like we have conquered the like quantitative side of things. But now what's so cool about what you are doing is that you are taking a very like naturally occurring experience and you're articulating it in a creative way. And like, that's sort of the other side of the brain, you know, that we were using in the engineering world. Now you're sort of using these experiences and transcending like just data, and you're making it accessible for people, right? Even if they've never experienced something like that. And I think that's incredibly admirable. And on top of that, let me just tell you that there are a bunch of people excited to see you, man. So Sterling says, hey, right? Parian's here. She says, Nate, you're such a special darling. Aw, guess what? Our friend TJ, who also went to school with us at Boston University, right? The man that introduced me to the Dark and Stormy, he's on there. Guys, if you're watching this and you're wherever you are, just shoot us a comment. Let us know that you're here. Yeah, man. But I think it's great. And I was going to ask you, you know, what kinds of things were you interested in learning? You know, the things that you don't normally get, like for instance, and by the way, I have some Maker's Mark right here. We're actually going to go through like a small tasting, a small like exercise live on the call. But what were those things? If I like get a bottle of Maker's Mark, right? It's there. I kind of know what it tastes like. But what were the things that you were looking for to learn about with spirits like that?
You know, so you mentioned we have this quantitative background, and when you come out of that background, I actually work on sensors now. I work on photon sensors, and you kind of approach it from this idea that everything kind of falls neatly into a box or a range or a spectrum or something like that. And with flavor, it's a little bit different because, first of all, it's visceral. Like you're actually taking some of that thing that's in the glass, and you're in the act of smelling it, some of that thing is actually going into you, right? There's volatile molecules that are coming off of that liquid, and they're actually entering your system physically. Then that's different than any other sort of sense that we have. You know, ears, you're listening to sound waves. You know, your eyes, you're looking at an electromagnetic spectrum part of it, but it is not directly in you. And then the second thing that's different about it is that we have this kind of like lock and key system. When you smell or you taste something, you have receptors inside your face, like right below your eyes, basically, that are physically made to fit with one kind of molecule. So when that molecule comes off, you get a little data shot there. And that's different than any other quantitative kind of thing that I've ever approached because, well, it's not really that quantitative, right? Like I'm smelling this thing and my brain gets a data feed. But I don't get the data feed. My brain gets it. My conscious brain, what that gets is like this compiled report of that data, plus like what I saw, how I'm feeling that day. And maybe most importantly, my memory bank of how that data has affected me in the past. And it creates this object, right? This memory object. And that's what I actually see. That's what I feel. So like we were talking about like the banana, right? Like a yellow banana. If you were to see a green banana, or say an apple that looks like a banana and smelled banana, like that would be confusing. That would mess the system up. So, coming from a quantitative point of view, I kind of had to shift a little bit and understand this a little bit better for what it is, I guess.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, you're right. Like, I mean, it's an interesting thing with taste and smell. Right. And just like you said, with the memory bank, like, do you think that that's why people end up sort of gravitating towards one spirit, like one type of drink versus another? It's because the first time that they experienced it, all of that sensory data that came to them with regards to the smells and the tastes of the actual spirit, but then mix that with how they were feeling that day. Just like you were saying, you know, the, all of the emotions that they were feeling in the present moment, everything was like a perfect storm. They loved it. And then they just stuck with it.
It's a great question, because that gets at what, you know, sort of what is the idea of quality in a flavor, or, you know, the subjective experience of taste that I'm having. And really, that's one of the foundational kind of ideas I had in starting this company, is that the most of the marketing that's out there kind of subverts that kind of one-to-one experience that you have. Like the thing in the glass that I smell and that I like is so affected by what you see and what you know. And maybe your dad liked this and you have a special relationship with this product because of that. And that's completely independent of the actual thing that's in the bottle. So I'm kind of taking your question on a run here.
Go for it, man. No, really, this is good.
But the idea of quality is it's hard to nail down because of that, because we don't have this, you know, direct relationship between the actual product and our experience of it. So maybe I didn't answer your question all the way.
No, it's essentially right. And by other companies sort of, I would imagine they kind of use that to their advantage as well. Like, so it's not about the experience of what it's like to drink it, but it's also everything that surrounds the experience. And if they can control that or portray that in an appeasing way, then they're winning.
Yeah. And that's not to disparage marketing in spirits. You know, that's a really important part of this process as well. It's just not the part of the process that I want to spend my time focused on or talking to other people about. You know, I want to have good marketing, good design, and responsible marketing and design that actually reflects the value of the thing that I'm selling.
Well, tell everybody. So, okay, when you introduced to me the idea of an independent bottler, you had to explain it to me a little bit, what it was. For everybody that's listening right now, what is it actually? What does an independent bottler do?
Well, so there's a distinct supply chain with companies creating this product, and then it kind of comes down to the consumer. But in the middle of that process, there's a lot of things that happen. Especially the bigger companies, they're often aging the product in barrels, and that introduces this wildly variable element where one barrel can taste completely different than another barrel at the end of the aging process, even if all the other things are held constant. And that was apparent even in this last batch of spirits, our heritage release. We had two barrels, literally two barrels, and at a sample size of two, it was so different between the two of them. We mixed them together. We blended them, which is what one of the kind of central parts of a product like Maker's Mark or, you know, some of the bigger brands. Is they take
that's right. You were telling me, like, in order to get that same taste every single time, they end up having to mix different barrels together.
Right. You get kind of an average of the flavor. But sometimes barrels don't fit, right? And it's one barrel, and a big company can't spin up their entire marketing and branding and sales machine to sell one barrel. But I'm a very small operation. I can market that barrel. I can bring that to someone, and I can show off that weirdness, the esoteric kind of flavors that come out of it that aren't part of, say, a large company's regular offering. The other thing that I can do is with smaller operators, they're often experimenting. So they'll have these cool projects that aren't part of their normal lineup that I can kind of come in and work with a little bit. As an independent bottler, I'm poised to kind of do all of the things that are really fun. That I think are really fun in the spirits industry, from these small batch projects all the way up to larger stuff too. I'll work with larger batches, but I get to choose and I get to kind of pick, and that lets me be able to curate the experience a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome, man. Like, and for fellow adventurers, people that like to travel, I mean, this is, it's like exploration through alcohol. Like, you really get to taste, but you have to, I would imagine, and really to get the essence of that traveling, you really have to know what you're looking for. And so can we start with the Maker's Mark? Because this thing is just staring me down, and I feel like we should talk about it, right? So I have some Maker's Mark here. How do you start? Like, what's the first thing when you talk about the experience? what's the first thing that I look for or that I do?
Well, I guess the first thing is you got to be ready for it, right? Like, you don't want to have eaten like a huge meal of like intensely spiced curry or something before you go to taste, because your ability to taste kind of, you know, you need to be prepped a little bit.
Cleanse the palate.
Another thing that's important is water. Like, you really want to be hydrated, because you're about to drink alcohol, right? And not only because of the effect of alcohol on you, you know, the drunkenness part of it. Really, it's almost more about keeping your system hydrated, so that when that alcohol hits your palate, it's not just straight alcohol going right onto your taste buds. You have a little bit of dilution that's happening there. That helps a lot. And then you can reset your palate more easily if you have water between them. So if you're tasting several different things, you don't get palate fatigue. The other thing is glassware. You know, like somebody told me once that the best glassware is the glassware you have, which is a really good thing. Like, don't not taste the spirit because you don't have the right glass, and don't spend an inordinate amount of money on the glasses that everyone else says you should. But
unless, of course, you have this type of glass, which Nate informed me before the show is, you know, I thought this was the typical like Mad Men kind of glass where you swirl it around. Yeah. But apparently it's hated in the spirits community.
I wouldn't say it's hated. That's a little strong. It's just not very much used anymore. You know, if professional tasters will use a Glencairn glass often. It's like a glass designed for whiskey. Other tasters will use what I'm using, which is a sherry Copita. It's kind of small enough. We're not going for shots here, right? So we want, like, you know, just not very much. But most importantly, it's got fluted sides. And what happens is as the liquid molecules kind of volatilize, as they evaporate off the top, it concentrates and it kind of keeps them there, so that when you go to smell it, they're a little bit more present than if you had, like, say, a straight-sided rocks glass. And you can kind of tell the difference if you test this out. But in the end, do it with what you got. Like, this is an experience for you.
Yeah.
And there's three kind of things that people talk about when they're doing professional tasting. This is something I wish somebody had told me right at the beginning, because it's so helpful. There's three separate experiences in this taste. There's the nose, the palate, and the finish, right? So when you approach the spirit, you're looking for the nose, and this is, you want to be a little careful. Like, Maker's Mark is not super high ABV, but if you're going for something that's cask strength, like straight from the barrel, usually it's up around 120 proof or 60%. That alcohol will get you, and you want to be respectful. You want to approach it kind of from a little bit of a distance and bring it in until you get that flavor.
You don't just like jam yourself in there. You really
got
to.
Not the first time around. You will eventually. Yeah. Like, for this stuff, I can get right in there and I don't feel any of that burning in my nose from the ethanol. But with like some of our, like Heritage is a little above 60%. You want to keep that a little further back and get the aroma before you blast yourself with the ethanol.
Got it. Okay.
And while you're in there, like, one of the things you can do is kind of keep your mouth open a little bit as you breathe in through your nose, so it doesn't overwhelm your nose. And what you're looking for is kind of, you know, that data feed is going in, and what you're looking for is memory objects that you can associate with what you're getting right now. And it's a practice. It's hard to do, but if you go in there, like, so for this one, I think right off the bat, there's like a little bit of like an apple-y kind of an aroma. There's this, some people talk about like smelling acetate. It's a little bit solventy. That's often happens with bourbons. I think, you know, at different points I get different things, and honestly, I'm coming off of a cold right now, so I'm not getting a ton, but at other points in Maker's Mark, you know, smelling Maker's Mark, I've gotten chocolate. I think I get that a little bit right now. Wet oak is another one, like that smell when you first wet an oak board, which, yep, you know.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Like a sort of an earthy sort of smell, but then like a little bit of like sweetness to it. There's a little bit of like sweet kind of caramelly sort of.
Yeah, caramel is a very classic one. That wet oak is obviously coming from the barrel. The caramel is coming from some other part of the process or the raw material. That earthiness you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's one of the ones that that you get out of kind of a long long aging time in a barrel, where those flavor molecules start building up bigger and bigger. You start getting that earthy or almost a meaty quality to it, which makes an older spirit really interesting.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things that I really like about Maker's Mark, is that it's got all this stuff going on in it. If you just kind of slow down and work with it a little bit, but you can get it at almost any bar. Like I love showing up in New Orleans with you every year and like sitting down and ordering a Maker's Mark like that. It's just it's kind of a feat of production, of systems that they are able to do that consistently and so widespread. And
yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, totally, man.
And then the one thing that I don't know if you know this smell, do you know what Palo Santo smells like? It's like a woody kind of incense-y smell.
Okay.
I've gotten that before. I'm getting a tiny bit right now. But it's interesting that that's there too.
And by the way, like all of this, just so that everybody listening, I mean, Nate and I were talking about this. The things that you are describing are because you built these up in your memory bank. Like you specifically smelled this versus this versus this, and it's in your mind. I mean, because smell is so closely tied to memory, like you're just going down the line almost and seeing what these kind of odors are bringing up for you. It's not like you're just coming up with it on the fly kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easy to assume that when you first approach like wine or coffee or spirits, you know, it's easy to think like, wow, like they're just making that all up. And maybe some of them are. But there is a way, like these are real molecules. These are real things in the real world. And your body has evolved to sense them for many different reasons. And you have access to this, and everyone has access to this. There's very few people who don't. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So there's the nose.
Yep. And then next is the palate, and the same thing, like this is where you want that water, right?
Oh, and by the way,
yeah, nice.
Got this. Perian just says it's good seeing you. She's listening to every word.
Hey, Perian.
Oh, and by the way, the serial killer is here watching as well. Hey, that's Greg. Just so that you guys know, we go down to New Orleans every year and for the serial killer soiree. And so the original serial killer is in the house. Okay. So first, just water.
Yeah. Just kind of like wet the whistle. And then, you know, go in and have a sip. And then as you're sipping, kind of take it in and like just kind of think about it for a second. I think in spirits, you don't usually swish just because the ethanol concentration is pretty high. And there's a little bit of a talent to keeping a high proof spirit in the right spot in your mouth. You know, you don't want it to go out your nose for sure. So you want to be careful and a little slow about it, but just a sip.
Okay.
So here, there's a little bit of a difference, right? That you're not getting all the same things that you necessarily the same things that you smell, but maybe there's, you know, maybe there's an evolution, or maybe it's similar, or maybe it's completely, completely different. And one thing that you notice in the palate is how well integrated the alcohol is. So ethanol itself as a molecule is pretty hard to take, right? For a human being, it's, you know, if you know the flavor of just straight up vodka.
Yeah. It's not like or something like that. Right?
Well, there's really vodka is the purest expression of alcohol and water that you can get. You know, there's very little other flavors in there. It's not necessarily, you know, some people I think like it. Some people really, really dislike it for I think genetic reasons, but, it's not like the best flavor in the world, and it definitely burns at high proof. So how well, like, is that burning all the way down? Are you like crying? Like then that's maybe not so well integrated, but if it's like this pleasant heat that kind of like creeps back and like you feel it a little bit down here, like, and it's not, you know, you don't want it to be a painful experience.
But yeah, like it's present, but it's not hurting you.
And does it work with the other things that are going on in there? Are there some flavors that go along with it? And how long does it last? So that's, you know, like, where do you feel it on your palate? Is it in the front? Is it in the middle? You can kind of notice those kinds of things. The flavors, Go ahead.
By that, you mean just like where you're feeling it on your tongue, like when you say palate, like front, back of your tongue, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, because you have
your throat.
You have different zones where you have different kinds of receptors on your tongue. So you're gonna experience different flavors in different spots. So you can kind of start locating them a little bit. And really, when you start talking about the back of your mouth, you're kind of getting into the realm of the third category, which is finish. It's like,
okay,
how long does it last, and how complex is it? How much does it reflect the flavors that I experienced before? So for me, the palate on this one, I get a lot of vanilla. I get that wet oak back. Both of those things are from the aging process, the direct contact with an oak barrel. I also get a little bit of chocolate, which I think is also from that process.
I got the chocolate too. Yeah, definitely.
I was really surprised when I tasted this, like, and paid attention, because I've been drinking Maker's Mark, like I said, at a bar with you for years, and I never got chocolate before, and it was really cool to see it pop up. I also,
it was after the serial killer soiree, so we had already impaired.
Yeah. I got a little bit of cornbread in here too, which is a hint to the raw ingredients in this. Yeah. And then the finish itself it lasts for a little while. It's not the longest finish that I've ever experienced in a spirit, but I'm still experiencing it now, plus or minus 10 seconds later.
Yep.
That makes it a little more interesting to me, the way it hangs on like that.
Is there, I mean, and that's just sort of articulating the state of the finish. It's not like a longer finish is universally desired or something like that. It's right. Really just a personal thing.
Yeah. And when you're talking about the quality of a spirit, as if it's of an easy thing to pin down, it really is just that you're defining all of the different parts of the process. Like if you can pick out something where clearly the producer has done something that's just to increase profits, then maybe that's not such a good thing for quality. But if you're going through this experience and you can rate all these different categories and, according to your own taste, like you can really define it for yourself.
Dude, well, this, okay. So for everybody listening, right. There's a couple of questions that I love to ask people. Actually, hold on. Before I get to that, let me pull up Perrion's question. Oh, wait, hold on. That's Lyndon. Hold on. We'll get to Lyndon's real quick. Hold on. But does the temperature make a difference when tasting something?
That is a great question. And absolutely it does, because we're talking about experiencing volatile molecules. And volatility is kind of like boiling point, right? Which is completely dependent on temperature. So you chill it down, you're going to taste less. You're going to experience less of those volatile molecules. You warm it up, you're going to experience more. I don't think you should warm it up or chill it down. Room temperature is great. Even with an ice cube, some spirits are pretty good, but you're not going to be tasting all of the things that are in there with the ice cube in there.
Yep. Okay. There you go. And then let me pull this one up. So Lyndon doesn't have any makers, but she does use her favorite scotch, which I know for a fact is Lafroy. Are you familiar with that one?
I am. I have a bottle right here.
Yeah. 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 That's what she drinks. So I'm sure. I mean, well, actually, I'm not sure, because it's like 9 a.m. on the West Coast right now. But you're drinking at 9 a.m. So who knows? Anything could happen.
There's a difference between drinking and professional tasting. It's a big difference.
That's right. All right. So if she's Lyndon, if you're professional tasting right now, then join us. Then join us. Let's see here. Sterling asks, does this tasting process apply to all liquors, i.e. tequila, gin, etc.?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would say cocktails and wine are very similar as well.
Okay. So same three things to look for: the nose, the palate, finish.
I say that without knowing very much about the world of tasting wine. But I think it is very similar. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. And Lyndon says she is sipping very gingerly, but at least she's sipping. So excellent. So I like to ask people that come on the show, right? As this might be the very first time, I mean, it's one of the first times that I've ever gone this deep into a tasting like this. if people want to get better at this, get better at experiencing the nuance of something like Maker's Mark or a tequila or a gin or a mezcal or whatever, if there was one thing that you would suggest that they do to improve themselves in that respect, and either for their own enjoyment or simply to like impress girls at the bar or like whatever they're looking for, what would you suggest that they do?
I would suggest that they more fully experience their world through smell every day. Like go to your spice drawer and open every jar, and not just smell it, but also create that memory object. Force yourself to write it down, right? Like, make your brain go through the whole process of recording that for you, so that when you come back later to a spirit or anything you're tasting, you have that memory object to compare it to. You have that new thing you can pull up as a thing in your like object in your brain, in your thought process in your brain. I think that's really important. I think,
well, just like you were saying, I would have never gotten cornbread, right? Like, as I look at this, I would have never gotten cornbread. However, like, if I close my eyes and really think about it for a little bit, I'm starting to taste, I can taste just a little bit. But I also, it's been a while since I've smelled cornbread. So yeah. I'd have to go back and actually smell just that. And then with other stuff to really build that bank up, just like you were.
Well, I think the amazing thing is that the compounds that are in the spirits are naturally occurring because of biological processes that happen everywhere, chemical processes too. And it's not, I just said Palo Santo. There's no Palo Santo in Maker's Mark. It's an impression that I got, possibly quite likely because there's something in Palo Santo that's also in this or something very similar. So in the way that my body reacts to it. The other thing I'd say, Josh, if you can get this book, this is a great book. This is by Harold McGee. It's called Nosedive. And that process that we were talking about is right there. And can I plug another one? I'm not affiliated with either.
Go for it, man.
This is a really good one too. So the Wine and Spirits Education Trust, Understanding Spirits. This is a textbook for their Level 3 course in spirits. And if you want to get a little more information on how to technically taste, and also on the process behind all of these flavors coming through in these products, they are the best book I have found for that.
All right. There you go. That's, the Nosedive sounds interesting. It really does. Yeah. Yeah. And so let's see. Parian says, to become a great taster, does the food you eat and strong flavored coffee affect your taste?
So it does for a little while, but not permanently. Hopefully.
Yeah. Like it just sort of, I would imagine if you eat something really strong before you're about to do a tasting, like it kind of desensitizes you to some things and maybe overly sensitizes you to others.
Yeah. But there's the, kind of out of my background of detectors, there's this idea of calibration, right? And a lot of people talk about this. Like, if you're doing the same thing every day, if you eat a similar diet and you approach the same foods pretty regularly, you're going to have a baseline that you can then measure from. So if you all of a sudden like eat a really, really stinky like cheese or something like that, and then try to taste, of course it's going to be off. But just don't do that before you taste.
Just don't do that. Well, here, listen to this. So I'm going to try and read this. So, Nate, I once did a mezcal tasting experience in Mexico. They suggested putting your nose above the upper rim of the glass when determining, quote, nose. This allowed you to avoid direct slam from the alcohol, but allowed the herb and other flavors to reach you. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. People even talk about sometimes smelling around in different areas around the glass or in the glass and getting different things. And I think there's some credibility to that because you're dealing with volatile molecules. And if you let this kind of sit for a little while, of course they're going to stack up in there a little bit, in different ways. Of course they're going to pour out in different ways. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean that there's not different kinds of things happening in different places. So yeah, I think that's reasonable.
I like it. So this one thing is essentially start smelling things. Like, you know, in the simplest sense of the word, go to your spice rack and start individually smelling things to try and build up that memory bank. And if someone does this, Nate, in your experience, if somebody did this and they started today, let's say, and they started just getting a better sense of what these things were, where do you think in your experience they'd end up? Like, is this something that you can progress rather rapidly?
I think in 30 days you would have a marked, just because on the one hand, just because you're paying attention in a different way, it will help you, but also you're going to build that memory bank up. So, you know, even if you just did one a day for 30 days, you're going to have 30 new, like real new memory objects that you can then you can apply to different experiences going forward. And I think what that does for you is like you kind of, if you build that framework, you kind of learn a little more about yourself and a little more about this world of smell that's out there. You can then reach outside of your comfort zone a little bit on, you know, into new experiences. And some of them are going to be bad experiences, but some of them are going to be great. And you might find things that you really love.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's essentially the whole idea of the company, like of the independent bottling company. And like, by the way, do you, when you say Peacut and Carwick, do you just shorten it to like Peacut, or do you say the whole thing every time?
I say the whole thing every time.
Okay. So with that, I mean, that's the entire idea. It's like an exploration of not just the spirits that are out there in the world, right, yet to be discovered, but also discovering a lot about yourself and the way that you interpret different smells and different flavors.
Yeah, it's a wildly complex scenario that we are able to like get into and enjoy. It's here. It's all right here. Everybody's got it.
Well, tell me, so you have a flagship spirit, the very first one called Heritage, and it's actually behind you.
Yes, it is.
let's see it.
All right.
So tell us a little bit about this one.
So I don't know if you can see it very well. The lighting is a little off. Heritage is a California single malt. And, you know, so there's this category of American single malt. Single malt, if anybody doesn't know, is a malted barley that has been fermented and distilled, but it's only malted barley, and it's single malt because it's produced at one distillery. And that's a name that comes from the Scotch world. And the category of American single malt is kind of this new thing that's happening now. It's not officially recognized at the federal levels, but there are people working on that right now. And it's just single malt that's been produced in the U.S. And it usually has a spin on it because, you know, a lot of producers in the U.S. make bourbon. So there's some things that are kind of like bourbon about American single malt. This one came from a distillery in Livermore, California, which is near where I am now. And it was made from a UK unpeated malt, which means that it came from a company in the UK, and the malt itself was produced without putting that smoky flavor that you might get out of, say, that Lafroy we were talking about. There's two barrels of it. One of them, like I said before, was different than the other. It was a little like drier and more subdued. And the other barrel was like a stinky, syrupy, sweet, like really kind of bourbony single malt, and they went together and they made this really like really really good spirit that there are 225 bottles of. We're starting distribution this month in California, once it's gone and it's that's it, and then we're on to the next thing.
That's what's so cool about it is that it's a rarity, you know, like there's a mystery and a mystique about it. First of all, understanding more about how you take it in and what you like and what you don't like being able to identify that is one thing, but then knowing that you almost have to live in the moment when you're drinking it, because those moments are finite. It's not like you could just go to the store and grab another one. Like, I love that. I love that premise. So Perian asks, She wants some.
Well, so for the moment, we are only distributing in California. That's where we're limited. But make some noise on social media. Maybe if you have a bottle shop or a bar that is really into whiskey, you could let them know about us. And if there's some more noise out there, maybe we can get a distributor to pick us up and take us to your state as well.
I love it. Well, I'll tell you, Lyndon has a question, and she's in California, right? But she says, Nate, with the aging of a spirit, is the rule of thumb generally the longer that it's aged, the more complex it becomes? Certainly the price is ubiquitously increases with age. P.S. I'm in California and I'm getting a bottle of your latest release.
That is awesome. Thank you, Lyndon. The rule of thumb, yeah, generally it gets a little more complex as it ages, but there are some caveats to that. Like at a certain point, you get so much wood influence, so much of those like oaky, tanniny things that the really, really old ones are interesting, but like verging on undrinkable. We're talking like 50 years or like the really, really old ones. And producers can do different things that kind of change that process around a little bit. And I'm not saying everyone is like that, but you have a couple different things going on in the barrel. One is the barrel's kind of like a big tea bag. It leaches some of the things from the barrel into the whiskey. And then it's also like a sponge in that it allows gas exchange from the outside to the inside. So you have oxidation that happens in the spirit, and that's the process by which those flavor molecules kind of build up into longer and longer chains. And that's the process of getting more complex. So those two things working against each other, sure, complexity can, increase and increase and increase. But if the oak flavor leaching from the barrel overtakes that, like you kind of want to make a judgment call at a certain point, like how those two different things are happening and when you want to pull the plug.
Is that to say then that you're constantly testing it? Like you're constantly just pulling a little bit and testing it and seeing how those two things are interacting with each other?
Constantly meaning like every year or something like that. We're talking about 12 or 20 year old whiskeys. Like you're not going to be in there every month testing it.
Yep. Okay. One other question, right, which I think is interesting. Craig says, how do you decide upon bottle shape? Are certain shapes generally identified with distinct spirit categories?
That's a great question. I don't know how other people have done it. I did it. I chose a bottle that this is actually a vintagey looking kind of port bottle shape. You can kind of see the bulb in the neck, and it's actually made for port wine. And we used it for this because I felt like it evoked kind of a classic look, kind of like what some of the Scotch producers are doing. Like I think the Laphroaig bottle even looks a little like that. And also just, supply chain availability. That's a big issue, styling, working with a designer, those all play into it.
Yeah. Well, is that to say then that it really has nothing to do with the drinkability of it, the way that the glass does? Like the glass has some actual utilitarian function to it, seemingly.
Yeah, I think the one place where someone might argue that the bottle itself has a function in the flavor is the cork. So depending on the material that you use for that stopper, like, is there a little bit of gas exchange happening across the cork? So over time, is it doing a little bit like what it's doing in the barrel? Glass shape itself, I don't think changes the flavor.
Yeah, and it ends up just being almost a style, right?
Yeah, and it feeds into your visual, data feed. So yeah, there might be some effect there, but the actual liquid, if you were to blind taste from two different shaped bottles the same product, I don't think you'd be able to taste it.
Yeah, well, is that to say then that as you continue with Heritage and then future spirits, you'll try your best anyway, depending on supply chain availability, to like match the feel of the spirit with an appropriate bottle?
No, everything goes in the same bottle, just like this, with the same kind of a label. And then we've actually designed this kind of graphic on the front.
For the people there'll be some people listening on the podcast Can you explain what we're looking at on the, like, there's a colored ring and then there's a couple of different, looks like three categories. What are those?
So there's three general categories that we think that spirits kind of come from, the spirits flavors kind of come from, right? There's the ingredients that you use. Then there's the processing, which is everything you do through from fermentation all the way up through distillation, where you're creating the alcohols. Well, actually, even before that, the mashing, where you're changing the starch to sugar. Then you're creating the alcohol from the sugar. And then you're distilling, you're selecting those flavors in a physical way. So that's the processing. And then there's the aging. So we just talked about that a little bit in the barrel. And rather than, you know, we wanted to come up with a way to somehow express what the experience was going to be like before you open the bottle. And you can categorize flavors in many different ways. And many people do it, you know, in, you know, sort of a spectrum based color wheel or categories of things that taste like other things. But we really liked the idea of categorizing by where the flavors come from. So you have some kind of a framework that actually reflects the structure of the real world that's out there. So when we say, you know, chocolate or wet oak, we can put those things in a category based on the history of the actual thing that's actually in your hand in the bottle. Not an extra system that we make over the top of everything else.
Right. So it gives you sort of a visual, like a quick visual representation of just essentially like where it stands generally, like as opposed, you know, so that
right.
you can almost know, like, almost like preps you a little bit on what to expect.
Right. And one of the things that I dorked out about and I'm really proud of is that this label is made with letterpress. So a letterpress is a traditional, well, I guess it's an old industrial technique of printing. And it's really beautiful. And what we've done is the center part of the projection here, the inner circle, stays the same on every bottling. But the blue marks change based on how our interpretation of the spirit, flavor wise, is done. So how we feel the aromas, how we experience the aromas, we're communicating that on the bottle. So the next bottle is going to have this same label. Just the blue part's going to change and it's going to be a little different.
I dig that, man. I really like that.
The other thing that's cool about this is that every bottle has a serial number, and you can go to our website, peacuttandcarwick.com/library, and you can actually put in the number of the bottle and you'll get our tasting notes for that bottle, a little more in-depth kind of history of what's in the bottle.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Speaking of that, what's the best way to continue the conversation with you about this? Tell us a little bit about how people can find you.
So, and I'm sure you'll put this in the show notes. We're at, on Instagram, Peacut and Carwick with underscores. And we are also, we have a webpage. We just went live, peacutandcarwick.com. Check us out there. Go to our Learn More page and put in your email address, and we will put you on our mailing list and let you know where our spirits are going, like where you can pick them up. There's also a find a retailer page where you can see where we're currently stocking.
Yes, yes. Everybody watching and listening to this, I encourage you to check it out. If anything, follow Peacut and Carwick on Instagram, because the posts that you're putting out these days are not just, I mean, they're cool, but they're also incredibly informative. Like, I can tell that you put a lot of thought into each post. It's not like you're just taking a selfie in front of, like, you know, like your bottling plant or something. It's, you know, you're actually trying to teach people a thing or two about what they're, you know, what they're drinking and what, or what they possibly could be drinking. And I like that.
We're trying our best to not be a lifestyle brand. We're trying to be a brand, that's responsible and has substance.
I like it. And, please really like to, so TJ wants a link. So I will put a link to the Instagram on the show notes. And then also, I don't know, do you have an Instagram link on the website itself? I would imagine you probably do.
We will. We don't yet, but we will.
Cool. Dude, this has been one of my favorite conversations to date, my friend. This has been so good. love what you're doing. I know that we have talked about this for a while, but watching it actually unfold is just an amazing thing. So I'm so happy to see that.
Thanks, Josh. It's great to talk to you, and thank you for the opportunity to come on board your platform here and talk about it.
It's yeah, great. Of course. Anytime, man. Anytime you want to have a midday or early morning tasting, I am all for it. Well, guys, that wraps up another successful episode of Fire Builders Live. I tell you, you got a bunch of fans here. Thank you, Nate. Right?
Thank you.
TJ is so cool. Parian says we love you. Right? Sterling, way to go. Honestly, this has been so good. So yeah, dude, you're a hit. You're a hit. I can't wait. Hopefully someday I will be able to try Heritage if you save a bottle. I know that you can't ship outside of California, but yep. I'll just have to come and visit you.
That's right.
We'll do it. We'll make it happen. Well, thanks again, guys. This is Josh, Nate. Elvis is roaming around here somewhere. We are signing off for another episode of Fire Builders Live. Again, we stream live Monday through Saturday at 12 noon Eastern, so don't miss it. Nate, thanks again, man.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. We'll see you guys later. Adios.